worry, no sweets. Only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 42 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I am Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes on The Commentist Network at thecommentist.com. And you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will find out where in the world Andy is, check out some vegan news, discuss the recent animal rights conference, and move on into the question of the week, which is, should vegans date non-vegans? So let's start it off, Andy. What's been going on with you?
Well, when last we recorded, I was still in Los Angeles, and I was mostly trapped inside of the animal rights conference all weekend, so I didn't venture out too much, but there was one place that was kind of the talk of the conference for a lot of people. It is the closest all vegan spot to the conference, but it was a really good one, and I looked up how to pronounce this, and I'm not entirely sure, so as per usual, apologies for any mispronunciation. But it was an all-Cuban vegan cafe, I believe, called Equilacqua. Equilacqua. I think I got it, but
I'm looking at the name, and I would have no idea how to say it.
So anyway, it was really good. I went in, a few days after the conference had ended, so it was really quiet. They said it was just incredibly busy, and actually had to shut down early on Saturday night because people just like bought out all the food. But it was really cool. My server was very friendly. I walked in, he was wearing like a support the ALF shirt and had a pin that said the same thing, and we got to chatting, and I found out that the owner of the cafe also used to live in their vehicle and tour around and follow the Grateful Dead all over the place. So it was a very, very relaxed atmosphere. And I thought the food was awesome. It was really, really good, very flavorful. I got the arroz con pollo, which is just, chicken and rice, and they have a lot of mock meats there. And then before I left, I picked up a Cuban sandwich, and it was delicious. It had some giant slab of some kind of, vegan ham and Swiss, which I'm pretty sure was like a daya slice, but it was melted, and it was really good.
Nice.
So definitely looking forward to going back there and bringing more people to it.
Like me.
Someday, Paul. Someday I'll pry you out of the cold, cold heart of New England and bring you around the world.
I hope.
Cue, I can show you the world playing in the background.
And there's the outro song.
There we go. Okay, and so then I made my way up to the Bay, and I got to go to a place a lot of people had been telling me about called No-No Burger. And they are a all-vegan burger like cart trailer food truck thing at the Soma Street Park, which
that was a lot of different vehicles you just named there.
Some kind of vehicle. They're pretty much permanently there, but it's in the Soma Street Park, which is, it's like a cart pod, as they say in Portland. But they have, a bunch of different food vendors in their little food trucks, and they also host special events there, including something called Very Vegan Sundays, which is, I think, once a month. And every vendor that's in there has to only sell vegan food.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. So I think No-No Burger was the only one that was sort of geared towards vegan and vegetarian stuff. So it'd be interesting to see what other people come up with. And so what I got from No-No Burger was the Volcano Burger. And it was so good. I thought it was fantastic. The patty itself was like, it's a good patty. Wasn't like the best patty I've ever had, but it was sort of the collection of all the toppings that went on top of this, pretty decent patty that really made the whole thing work for me. See, it had the patty, it had, lettuce, pickles, melted cheese, things you'd kind of expect on a burger. And then it had fried jalapenos, grilled pineapple, bacon. What? Are you not a fan of grilled pineapple, Paul?
I'm not really a fan of like the pineapple on like savory things.
Oh, Paul. I truly do need to show you the world. I'm such a huge fan of pineapple on pizza. I'm sure are you a pizza purist, Paul?
I've had pineapple on pizza. Pineapple on pizza
a couple times. Pineapple on pizza?
A couple times. It's okay. It's okay. Period.
I love it. It would be, if I could only have one topping, it would be pineapple. Anyway, and then it also had teriyaki sriracha sauce. And the pineapple is actually what really made this whole thing work. It's marinated in something and then like thrown on the grill. It was so delicious. I loved it. I can't wait to eat it again.
Nice.
And I'm not sure what they were using for the bacon, but it was also quite flavorful.
That's one hell of a burger.
It sure is. And then speaking of bacon, the other place I want to talk about is the Butcher's Son, which is a place that we've mentioned before because I went when they were having their soft opening. They didn't have the full menu yet, but I got to go and see the full menu. It was quite glorious. But the thing that was the true highlight was they had this maple bacon donut, and it was just like piled high with whatever their seitan bacon that I assume they're making in house because they make all their meats and cheeses in house there. And then like this maple drizzle. Ugh, it was so good. It was a fantastic donut.
Just all about that bacon this week.
Just loving on that vegan bacon culture. So, yeah, so those are all the food places that I care to mention. If you want to see pictures of a lot of that stuff and many, many more, including some very beautiful sushi from Shizen, you can head over to our Instagram, which is just, of course, it's The Bearded Vegan. So go check that out. Give us a follow if you like following along with all the food adventures. So that's all the food, Paul. Let's move on into the news.
Cool. So the first news item, this is something that I saw a couple people post on as a video on Facebook that I saw, and then someone actually sent it to me, one of my friends on Facebook, and was like, "Hey, have vegans seen this?" And what it is this new, I put new in quotations because it's new for me. I don't know how new it is for other people. This new vegan leather that is made from mushrooms. So I did a little research into it and found a website called Ecotur. I think, I don't know. We'll post it. You can decide how to pronounce it. And it's actually called Muskin, which originally I think I've been pronouncing it Muskin, which is kind of a funnier pronunciation, I think. But Muskin makes more sense because I realized it's probably mushroom skin, just shortened to Muskin.
But Paul, Muskin works because that's like a cow, like moose. It's like, you know, so I feel like it could go either way.
Although it's M-U, and I feel like they should put the little dots over the U if it was going to be Muskin.
I guess.
I don't know. Who knows? But
Paul, I tell you this, we don't know.
No, we do not. So on the just a quick description of what it is from that website. It says it's 100% biodegradable vegetable leather extracted from mushroom caps and tanned using chemical-free methods. It resembles suede but is much softer, and that's according to Italy-based textile manufacturer Grado Zero Escape. And it's described as breathable, pliable, naturally water-repellent, and suitable for direct contact with human skin. I would hope so. And I did a little, I tried to do a little more sleuthing into it. I found the Grado Zero Escape website, which is, I'm assuming it's an Italian website because it just does not look great. It was just a not so great formatted website. I'm kind of a stickler on websites. There was just like text everywhere. It was really hard to figure out what was going on. But eventually I located the Muskin and it kind of, I found like, oh, you can buy it. And so that brought me to another website, which is called lifematerials.eu. And we'll include all these links so you can decide for yourself how good these websites are. But it was kind of hard to figure out how expensive it was. Like you were buying like sheets of it. But when you picked the amount that you wanted, it was just small, medium, and large. So I don't exactly know how much you were getting or how expensive it is. But yeah, but and that original article, I'll also say, was from like last month, I think. So I think it is fairly new, and hopefully this takes off.
Yeah, I think that's really exciting because finally a good use for mushrooms that is not eating them. So, Paul, would you prefer mushrooms on your pizza instead of pineapple?
I love mushrooms. Yeah, I love mushrooms on pizza. I love grilled mushrooms. Love everything.
So slimy. But this is really cool with the mushrooms. It feels like we're having some kind of weird, like, explosion of alternative leather sources that are happening lately because You saying this reminds me that I saw some articles going around about a leather that was made from pineapple byproduct, pineapple waste of some kind.
Well, I guess that's a better use of pineapple.
Paul, I walked right into that one. Did not even realize. The pineapple leather is called Pinatex. And then we'll post a link to an article about that in the show notes. And there's also some leather that's made from tea of some kind. So we'll post a little article to the tea leather as well.
Yeah, and it's nice because I think it's a little different than the faux fur, because I've said this before in other episodes. Like at this point, at least in the U.S., for the most part, fur is just like a fashion accessory. I mean, even when it's like cold outside, it's like you can get other stuff that's not fur to keep you warm, in the U.S. at least. But leather is like
Fleather
is like I feel like that's just what a lot of types of clothes are made out of, like shoes or belts and stuff like that. So it would be nice. Like whereas fur, I feel like, is something that you can just say, hey, don't. To vegans or non-vegans, just like, hey, don't wear fur. It's as easy as that. You don't really need it. Leather, there's a lot of like clothing products that just are made out of leather, and it's not always super accessible for people, especially if this isn't on your radar, to get like fake leather. So this will be nice. Hopefully this takes off.
I hope so. On a side note about leather, I once got into a conversation with a friend about like the usage of leather, and they kind of just claimed that it was, you know, it's a byproduct of the meat industry, so it's just something that would otherwise go to waste. And that caused me to do a little research, and I learned that the hide of a cow is actually the single most valuable part of the cow. It accounts for about 10% of the profit that is made off of a cow. So it seems like even if everyone was to stop eating meat, but there was a demand for actual, you know, cow flesh, leather, that industry would still continue to raise and exploit cows. So I'm all for all of these improvements that are being made in the tech field for leather.
Definitely. So let's go on to our other piece of news for the week. And that is an article from QZ, which we've used that website many times. Hard to mispronounce that one. Two letters.
What if it's like the cool way of spelling quiz? Because like they take out the vowels.
Oh, well, I actually think it's the cool way of spelling quartz, because that's at the top of the website.
Okay, well, you win this time, Stellar.
But it's an article that is titled, dup, 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 A Vegan Mayo CEO Has Embarked on a One-Man, $200,000 Ad Campaign Against Donald Trump. And so essentially what this is Josh Tetrick, who is the CEO of Hampton Creek, bought a full-page ad in the Sunday New York Times, which goes for a hefty $193,171. So no small price for a one-page ad that will run one day. And basically, it's just a letter to Donald Trump saying why he does not agree with Donald Trump and how basically he's... He felt like he needed to say something against him, calling him un-American and things like that. And at the bottom, he actually leaves his phone number so that you can call him to talk to him about it, I guess, if you so choose. But interestingly, even though this is, I guess, vegan news because of who it is, he does not mention anywhere the company, Hampton Creek. He does not mention veganism at all. It just kind of seems like from the article he thought that he had to do something, and like this was the thing that he chose to do about it. So kind of interesting. Notably, I guess, it doesn't say if I don't think it says if he personally paid for this out of pocket. Or,
wait, what was that, Paul? Did you say someone personally paid out of pocket?
I feel like our Droopy Dog references have just exponentially increased every episode, and I have no problem with it. So I don't know if he did that or if he was using like the company money, or I mean, if he paid out of pocket, like $200,000 is no small amount of money. But maybe that that Just Mayo money is getting him, it's making him a billionaire.
I mean, they do have some big investors, but I mean, Paul, have you just, my first question is, have you been sitting there texting Josh Tetrick?
Well, I have not, no.
You should.
I should, even though I'm pretty sure it's like a landline, so.
You can ask him like when certain flavors are finally going to come to the West Hartford Whole Foods. I found the Caesar. I found the blue cheese. I found the sweet mustard. When am I going to get the other ones?
Or I'll be like, hey, are you friends with those Beyond Meat guys? Because I really like those Beyond Burgers in my Whole Foods, please. Can you tell them to get on their game, please?
You'd probably have to ask for the Beyond Burgers in a droopy dog voice to get anything.
To get anything out of them. But yeah, so that's kind of, again, it doesn't like really have to do with veganism at all, which I don't think is, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that he didn't kind of shoehorn in veganism into something that didn't necessarily have to do with it exactly. I feel like actually if he did that, a lot of people would probably be like, oh, this is just some outrageous vegan making some outrageous claims or something like that. So yeah. I'm sure it was an intentional non-inclusion of anything sort of vegan.
Yeah. I mean, I can totally see why he wouldn't include vegan in the wording. I mean, Hampton Creek especially has been like trying to distance themselves from the animal rights movement and veganism, at least publicly, I think, because they don't, you know, for the exact reason you kind of said, they don't want any reason for people to dismiss what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they weren't even at, you know, Natural Products Expo West this year. Like, they're just like, we're in Target and Walmart. We're in Target and Walmart. And, you know, that's like, we're going for like the salt of the earth. Our stuff is cheaper than, you know, Hellman's Mayo, all that. And they're not trying to be some fancy boutique brand. So I think that's kind of the strategy there. But yeah, this ad is curious to me, I guess, because I mean, Hampton Creek seems like such a strategic company, and I'm not sure what the point of this was. Obviously there are a lot of people in this country that like Trump and like are huge supporters, and that's kind of scary, but it's also not like a bold statement really to come out against Trump. You know, obviously that's something that is going to win you favor with like a lot of people in a certain crowd. So I'm just like, why spend $200,000 on this thing, which is like, it's cool, but like, what is it really getting anybody other than getting him some kind of nice bonus points with a certain sect of the population?
Yeah. I guess like, I don't know. I think that we can talk about maybe how effective it would be and if it just is not very effective or there's really no point to it. From what the article said, it kind of just feels like this was what he thought would be effective. And I guess it's not, I don't think it's necessarily going to hurt anything. So, or unless maybe he just like, everyone in Hampton Creek was like, all right, you're not getting paid for a month because I got to run this $200,000 ad. Other than that, I can't really see how it's necessarily a bad thing. Like you said, I don't know if it's going to do anything, but yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's also, I guess it's hard to see how it's a bad thing. It's also hard to see how it's like really a good thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it's better that he did that than he didn't, but it's hard for me to see the strategy behind it. In terms of how much money was spent on that, I'm sure a lot of the effective altruist crowd would be very upset to see $200,000 spent on this versus going to some, you know, organization or work that they would deem worthy. But I guess it's a cool thing in general.
Hey, Andy.
Hey, Paul.
Speaking of the effective altruist crowd,
uh-huh.
How was that animal rights conference this week? Was it this week?
It was like 2 weeks ago.
Okay. But yes, so that was the news. Now with my flawless segue, let's move on into Andy's experiences at the Animal Rights Conference.
The first thing I wanted to say was I listed a bunch of beardos last week and I neglected to include Stacy. And that episode's not even out yet, but I just felt bad. So Stacy, thank you for stopping by and saying hi as well. And again, before I get into this, I have like a really different vantage point of the conference because I am there as a vendor and I was by my lonesome. So I was just, you know, at my table all day long. Do not go to any of the regular panels or anything like that. So it's hard for me to really critique the substance of the conference. And if you are looking for something of that nature, I would highly recommend listening to the most recent Vegan Warrior Princesses Attack podcast because Callie was there and it was great to see Callie, a wonderful person, always fun to chat. And they just talked at length about the conference and a lot of the issues with the conference, as well as some of the highlights. So definitely go check out that if you would like the opinion of someone that actually was sitting in on a lot of the educational panels and sessions that were happening. But I'll start with the things that I like. And the thing that I like, the reason why I go to this conference, and for me, I made the trek from East Coast to West Coast in the van to do so, is because of the people that are there. It's for me, it is a place where I get to see a lot of really great, hardworking, dedicated activists all in one place, whereas most of them, I don't get to see them unless it's at this conference or like maybe once a year. So for me, that's kind of like the main benefit. And I think that that is truly the most important part of the conference is that it allows all these people to sort of network with each other, make friends, and sort of just being around all of your people, whether you're friends with them or not, just sort of allows you to feel like, you know, there's a movement that has your back and there is, you know, it allows a lot of people to recharge. So I do think that that is probably even more so than any of the talks that are happening. I think that is over the years that I've gone as a vendor, that's sort of my take on the conference is that it's most necessary for kind of networking and just connecting people. With that said, this is not new by any means, but I do think there are a number of issues with the conference. I think that first off, it's not necessarily the most accessible thing. It is in the Sheraton, which is, you know, a very fancy hotel, not the fanciest or anything, but, you know, rooms, the like special rate was something around like $140-$150 a night. And obviously you split that with a couple people. It's not horrible, but parking was very expensive. And I just stayed in my van, but I was still paying like $18 a day to park near the conference. So things like that are certainly a barrier to entry. The conference does have, I think a lot of people don't know this, but they do have work scholar programs where people can go and work off the cost of attending the conference. They also have discounted rates for students and things of that nature. So they are working to make it more accessible to those that truly cannot afford it. But, you know, even with all of that, it's still obviously there are going to be people that just can't straight up afford to come to this conference. I don't know if the hotel is a necessary evil for this thing. They had record attendance this year. They had 1,700 people. So it's a lot of people. It's, you know, 100 plus vendors, organizations having tables and stuff. So I'm not sure what kind of venue could host this thing other than like, you know, conference centers and convention centers, which are designed to host this. And those things come with a very hefty price tag. So, you know, I don't know how much has been looked into finding other venues. I do know, you know, again, I used to work for Farm, so I have a close relationship with a lot of the people that are putting it on, and they work tirelessly. It is not an easy endeavor by any means. Everyone is just totally exhausted by the end of it. So I feel for that. And they kind of have this really tough task ahead of them of putting on a conference that attendees are going to enjoy and makes all these different interested parties happy. But that, of course, by no means excuses the problems that do come with the conference. So there are a lot of people that are trying to influence and make the conference better and more inclusive, but it is kind of a monumental task. And I think the other thing that made the conference not inclusive is that there was a lack of diversity, especially amongst the speakers that were happening. The animal rights movement is one that is largely made up of women, but a large chunk of the speakers were men, and especially, you know, white cisgendered men. So that is kind of an issue in terms of the representation, and because that's controlling the narrative that is out there and sort of steering the discourse of the conference. So I see that as a problem. And of course, you know, as far as race, it was not very diverse. And we'll talk about that just a little bit in a second. There are a lot of people that have been trying for years to sort of make the conference more diverse in that regard and kind of meet resistance on the part of just a few key people that are kind of the, or even maybe a key person that's kind of the gatekeeper for this stuff. So that's really frustrating. It felt like this year there was a lot more of an effort to make that an upfront conversation, which I appreciated. Keegan, actually, a friend of the show, Keegan from Cowspiracy, he was there and Cowspiracy had a table. He came by and he had some Black Lives Matter signs and was asking people if they'd be willing to, you know, put them out at their table to show solidarity. And it was really great to see that a lot of the bigger organizations were willing to do that. Some did not. I don't know if they denied it or just weren't approached, but I think that was probably like the very least that anybody could do, but it was still kind of a nice gesture. There was a group of folks, I believe they're pretty much all connected with Collectively Free, but on the second and third day of the conference, they were wearing t-shirts that said on the front, you know, what is 99% white? The mainstream AR movement. And on the back, it just said hashtag AR2White. So they were trying to kind of push that conversation as well. And that kind of culminated in a disruption of sorts during a session. One of them, who is seemingly a white male, he stood up and asked one of the speakers, who is a white man as well, if he would be willing to not speak at future conferences in order to make room for more diverse speakers. And there's video of that. We'll post a link to that in the show notes. Paul, you saw the video.
Yes, I did.
What was your impression of the video?
So the video kind of starts with the gentleman kind of, he's wearing that t-shirt that Andy was talking about. What's 99% white, the animal rights movement. And he's kind of just explaining to the video camera, like what he's going to be doing. So he says, oh, well, today we're going to be like asking some of the white male speakers if they will consider not speaking at next year's conference in order to make room for people of color to speak. And it explains like where the idea for it came from. And then it goes into a video footage of when he was actually asking it. And it is in a Q&A session. So I don't know, even though Andy, you kind of referred to it as a disruption, I don't know if I would call it a disruption because it's in like the designated time that is allotted for people asking questions. So even though it may be an awkward question, I wouldn't call it a disruption personally. But so basically he says, oh, this question is directed towards, and then he, because I think there was three people, he directed towards one of the guys that was speaking, and he says, like, would you consider not speaking next year? And then he kind of goes, he spends like a good amount of time, like 30 seconds or so, explaining why. And then at the end, because he took a little bit of time, he says again, very politely, like, would you consider not speaking at next year's conference? And there is kind of like this real awkward silence. And the moderator kind of says, oh, this question is not appropriate. Like if you want to ask him, talk to him about this, talk to him afterwards. And there's kind of like applause from the audience when the moderator says that, which is kind of weird, or kind of unfortunate, I guess.
It was during a Q&A, and I would gauge the way it was, you know, asked as being incredibly polite and also really kind of explaining. He did go out of his way to say, we have approached the organizers. In case that's your response, we have approached the organizers, and we've sort of been denied that conversation with the organizers, and they're not really willing to make changes or hear us out. So that is why we're coming to you right now.
Yeah, and so basically the guy, he asked the questions, the moderator kind of shuts him down. The crowd is definitely not on this guy's side, definitely on the moderator's side or the speaker's side. And yeah, that seems like, it's it. It's kind of unfortunate that, like, he wouldn't even really address the question.
Yeah, well, it does end with the person asking the question saying, you know, thank you for hearing me out, essentially. So I believe the person asked the question did not, you know, they kind of just let the moderator be like, that's not appropriate, and then they moved on. You could, like, hear a pin drop. It was very uncomfortable to watch, I'm sure. And upon hearing that it happened, I heard about it before I saw the video. I was like, huh, I wonder how I would respond to that because I'm not entirely sure. And then after thinking on it, I think, you know, kind of like what you said, Paul, at the very least, sort of acknowledging that, like, you know what, you're right, this is a problem. And, you know, I certainly would consider not speaking if it was to make room for a person of color to speak on the panel. You know, it's something I need to think about. But, you know, thank you for bringing up this really important topic. I feel like, you know, and I'd have to kind of work my way through it in that regard.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like a tough question, like, no doubt. It's a very tough question. And I'm trying to think, if someone asked me something that like this, or like another question that I can't think of one off the top of my head, but another question where there may be, like, you know, some people are for this, some people would be against this. There's kind of, you know, it's a weighty question. It's like, at the very least, I would say, like, you know what, like, give me some time to think about this. Like, maybe we can talk, privately afterwards. Just like, you know, I just need some time to process this. And I'll get back to you about it. But it really, like, there was no response from the guy. And maybe, you know, maybe he talked to the person who brought it up. Maybe the speaker talked to the guy privately afterwards. I would assume not, though, since, like, I don't think the point of this video was to kind of attack, like, a single person. I would think not. And so I don't know why, if he did talk to him afterwards, they wouldn't have included that. But I don't know. It just seems like that's the least that he could have done, is say, I'll think about it. But instead, he just kind of said nothing.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess part of me was like, is it, I don't want to say fair, but, like, is it fair to sort of place the burden on this one speaker who was on a panel that, you know, was with a person of color and a woman, you know, place this burden on them? But also, I'm like, people have been trying to have this conversation and not getting anywhere. So I guess maybe this is the way. This is the way to kind of finally put some pressure on people to start actually talking about it. And I was expecting to hear stories about them doing this at multiple panels throughout the day. But as far as I know, that was the only one. So I think that it probably would have been, it would have, you know, stirred a lot more of, you know, stirred the pot a lot more, ruffled some more feathers if they had been consistently doing that at multiple panels. That would have been interesting to see what kind of conversation that did start.
And I do think it's also super important to point out how the guy went about doing this, because, like we already mentioned, super polite about it. I think he was bringing up a controversial topic and he brought it up in the most appropriate way possible, despite the fact that the moderator says this is inappropriate. I think it is perfectly appropriate. It was during a question and answer. And I mean, he explained his reasoning. I feel like this was a straight out of our nonviolent communication episode. I feel like, if there's tons of takeaways to be taken away from this, this kind of short little clip, but one takeaway that I got was just, like, how to bring up these issues, because, I mean, there are so many ways he could have presented this that would kind of antagonize, the speaker. And even if he's in the right, like, I don't think it would have been as effective as what he did. So kudos to him for that. Oh, and, you know, I wonder if he didn't, or the organization didn't do this at other panels, maybe because they got kicked out after this panel, because it definitely seemed to have a negative reaction from the audience and the moderator.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't believe they were kicked out. And again, he was incredibly respectful and restrained in the way that he did it. But I do think overall we need to applaud them for kind of pushing the issue
even if maybe we have some concerns about the nuances of how, you know, how that happened, I guess. But I also feel like it's great to see other white folks pushing the issue. Like, you know, racism is a white person problem. We're the ones that need to be, like, you know, calling in our own and getting everybody on board and you know, not like speaking over people of color, but certainly doing the legwork of explaining things and taking on the difficult conversations that, you know, people of color are faced with every day and are experiencing a lot of, you know, fatigue from. So I think it's great that a white person was willing to sort of get out there and ask that question, because that's something that we should all be doing, is challenging ourselves and maybe making ourselves uncomfortable in order to make a stronger animal rights movement. I mean, that was one of the key points of the speaker, of the person asking the question, was like, I think we would all agree that a more diverse animal rights movement is a more effective animal rights movement. So he kind of went about it from, like, you know, this is also about the animals. Like, it is about having more diversity and welcoming more people into our movement, but it's also about the fact that doing so will make us a better and stronger movement. So, you know, I feel like overall, I can't do anything other than applaud the effort that was made. And one last note on this topic. So, David Carter, who we mentioned on the episode about vegan everyday stories, because he was in that. He is a black man, and he was speaking at the big Saturday night banquet, which is the, you know, the awards dinner and an auction and all this stuff, and very fancy. And he spoke, but he only spoke for about 7 minutes or so. And word on the street was that his time got cut down, unfortunately. But he basically addressed these issues and said, like, look around the room. This just resembles a country club right now. And, you know, the only people of color in here are myself and the people that are serving you the food. And certainly there were more people of color than that. But, you know, I would be surprised if it was less than or more than like 5%, you know, like it was clearly like 95% white. And when he said that, someone stood up who I believe was white and was like, no, we got one right here, pointing at a person of color. And I was like, oh my God, this is like, cringe. This is horrible. But I'm not like 100% sure the person was white, since I couldn't really see too well, but either way, it was just kind of like, oh man, this is like super uncomfortable. And I think a lot of people in the room at that point were just like, oh, like how do we respond? So, but, you know, props obviously to David Carter for pushing that issue as well. And it's not like people haven't brought this up at the conference in the past, but I do think that it seemed more at the forefront now than ever before. In my, you know, limited experience, I've been to maybe four of them at this point. And again, you know, always as a vendor. So, So I hope that this can be the impetus to create the change that is needed for the conference.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the last thing I will mention quickly is that there are these plenary sessions during the morning and the evening time, which is when there is not vending hours going on. So I did hop into some of those a couple of times. They go on way too long. But I had heard rumblings that there might be a disruption of Ingrid Newkirk from PETA speaking. So I went in for that just to see if anything was going to happen, and nothing happened.
And you had your camera ready.
I had my phone ready to record, but nothing happened. But I did. The result of that was that I listened to a full 30 minutes of Ingrid Newkirk speaking. Not something I would ever really go out of my way to do, but it was really interesting to me because the night prior, there was a well-known speaker who I will not name, who was giving his standard talk on sort of effective altruism and measure things by the numbers, and like, you're coming to the conference, you're making friends and connections, and that's good, but the only thing that really matters is, are you saving more animals today than the day before, and how can you look at your actions and make sure you're saving more animals, which is, you know, kind of a pervasive school of thought in the movement, and something we talked about on the interview with Casey Taft a couple of episodes ago. And Ingrid gave a speech that was kind of just like a direct response to that. Which I don't necessarily know if I agree with, but it was also kind of fun to see her ruffling the feathers of some people that are very self-assured in their approach. And essentially she was saying, like, that approach of nine chickens versus one dog is problematic because how do you truly weigh out that suffering and that pain and that misery? Okay, you have nine chickens. They're all going to be slaughtered after 42 days. And you have this dog that's chained up in a backyard living this miserable life. And he's going to be there for years. So, like, how do you weigh those up? Like, yes, number of lives wise, you're saving more chickens, but they live such a short life compared to that dog. And I'm not even sure how I really feel about that. But I do think it kind of points out some of the issues that I do have with the effective altruist movement, which is that it's very dispassionate. And you know, I don't know if there's any real middle ground between the, between those two ways of thought, but it was just kind of fun for me to see a lot of people get their feathers ruffled by that whole thing. So, you know, think of that what you will. Perhaps we'll talk about something like that on a, another podcast, but just wanted to get that out there 'cause I thought it was interesting.
Well, thank you very much for your report, Andy.
Yeah. So let's move on into our question of the week.
Should vegans date non-vegans?
Dun dun dun.
And we've definitely mentioned this before. I think there's been some mailbag questions that kind of address this. But while I was trying to think of something to talk about for this week, I kind of got an email from Vegan Society, which I don't remember why I'm getting these emails, but I get them and I read them occasionally. And I just happened to open this one up and it said there was an article that was called "Can Vegans Date Non-Vegans?" So I was like, hey, you know, let's look into this a little bit. So I won't go over all of the article, but basically it was just about the author, Elena Orde. I'm sorry, Elena. Both the first and the last name. I think it's Elena. But
that's definitely going in our super cut of all the times we mispronounce names and then apologize for it.
Exactly. So I'm sorry. I apologize. But it's the article is basically she's giving her experience about like dating someone that was not vegan, but then eventually he became vegan. So I think, and she acknowledges this, she had a kind of pretty easy time kind of convincing her boyfriend to go vegan. But she acknowledges that it can be difficult in relationships if you are a vegan and dating a non-vegan. So she gives a little some of her thoughts or tips, and they're basically, I mean, they're I guess common sense, just communication, sharing a space. So for instance, like kind of setting I don't know if rules are the right way, but at least establishing like whether or not there's going to be like meat in your refrigerator or what happens when you go out for dinner. Who's going to pick up the food if you're kind of combining your money together, how that's going to work. And then the last one is just showing respect. And again, it's a pretty, I don't know, I guess common sense way of thinking about it. But even being common sense, I don't think that makes the situation any kind of easier to navigate. So I figured we'd talk about this a little bit. So Andy, do you personally have any experience as a vegan dating a non-vegan?
I do. Right off the bat, when I went vegan, I was dating someone who was not vegan, and they were not the most understanding of that transition. You know, they were kind of like, oh, we can't go get pizza together anymore. And, you know, and I was already vegetarian at that point, and so they already were used to that. But vegan just seemed like this huge other thing. And so, but, you know, I was a new vegan, and I was like, I'm just going to make this work. And then I've definitely been on dates and been involved with some folks that weren't, you know, not even vegetarian, but for me at this point in my life, it's not something that I'm particularly interested in undertaking. Like my tolerance for people that are, you know, my tolerance and patience for those in the general public is endless most of the time. Like I'm always happy to sit down and have the conversation. even with someone who's being antagonistic. But if it's someone that I am like bringing into my intimate life, you know, and sharing things physically, emotionally, all that stuff, it's not really something I'm super interested in dealing with that kind of, you know, emotional stress or labor or whatever it might be. I think maybe the last time I went on a date with someone who was not even vegetarian, you know, it was our second date and we were driving around and just trying to find a place to eat. And I was like, I can eat anywhere. I'll find food no matter where we go. So wherever you want to eat, let's do that. And they were just kind of complaining and said, well, you can't even eat normal food. And I just did a U-turn and took them home. And I was like, I'm just done with this right now. So I have like a low tolerance for it at this point. But I think I have way more experience sharing a household with non-vegans than I do with dating non-vegans. And I think there's definitely some parallels to be found there. But before we get too deep into that, Paul.
Yes, Andy?
Do you have any experience dating non-vegans?
So I do have a deep, dark secret that is not too deep or dark because I think we've talked about it on the podcast before. But my last two serious relationships, the one I'm currently in now and then the one I was in before that, are both with non-vegans, non-vegetarians, just straight up meaties. And
blood mouths.
And I do think like there are aspects that would just be, I guess, more convenient if I was dating another vegan. But for me, at least, it's not that big of a deal that it's going to like, I don't know, be a make or break. And I will say, and we'll talk about this, like there are definitely issues. Even if like you're trying really hard for there not to make it not an issue, like there will be issues that come up. But I also want to acknowledge the fact that Andy and I, especially Andy, both live in these kind of, as Andy puts it, vegan bubbles, where we know a lot of vegans, we hang out with a lot of vegans, definitely Andy more so than me. But I know in Connecticut, I know a lot of vegans, and there are people that live in places, and we've had them like write in and comment on our stuff that that they are the only vegan that they know, like in person. Like, do you know yourself? Is that a weird thing to say? You are the only vegan that you know.
Does anybody truly know themselves, Paul?
But and obviously for those sorts of people, it's not really. There is no way to date. There's no way to avoid dating a non-vegan, and that's kind of. You don't really have any other option if you want to get out there in the dating world. So definitely I want to acknowledge that. But yeah, so my last two relationships have been with non-vegans. And basically what that article kind of said, like communication, sharing space, showing respect. I definitely try to do all those three things. And for me, like I try not to bring up veganism. I mean, obviously when talking about like where to eat and stuff, it comes up, but I typically try not to bring up a lot of ethical stuff unless it just kind of comes up organically, which it does a decent amount. But I try to be, and this is like kind of, you know, taking a page out of our NVC nonviolent communication conversation. I try not to be judgmental like at all. I mean, it's like I was a non-vegan and non-vegetarian at some point. Like different people are making these kind of steps at different points in their lives. There's different catalysts that people go through. So it's like I am not judgmental, or at least I try not to be. But even with that, I think it's hard, and I can understand this. I think it's hard when you are the meat eater in that relationship. I think it's hard not to feel judged, especially when. Like veganism is it's not my only identity, but it is a very large identity in my life. So I think it's hard for, because of that, I think it's hard for the other person not to feel like, oh, you wish that there was something different about me. And I guess, I mean, my response to that, it's kind of silly, but it's like my response is, well, I wish that everyone was vegan. And you are a part of everyone. So it's like, I guess, like, yeah, I wish you were vegan, but, I don't know. I don't bring that up ever, but even with that, you know, I completely empathize with this. It stinks if you're in like an intimate relationship with someone and you know that there's something about you that the other person wishes was different. That's just kind of like a crummy feeling. So it's like that does occasionally come up and it kind of creates a little rift. But like, I don't really like advocate to my partners. Like I'm not like actively trying to push them to be vegan. I think being in a relationship with them, it does make them eat a lot more vegan food and a lot less meat. Merely because like we're going out to places that are vegan friendly and they're trying new foods and stuff like that. And typically in my current relationship, when we cook food, it's typically 100% vegan. It's usually just when we go out for like pizza or something like that, that I'll get a vegan pizza and they'll get a cheesy pizza. But yeah, so it is kind of strange, but, and like I said, it would be probably more convenient to date a vegan in terms of like, hey, where are we going to eat today? But that's not really a huge deal for me personally. I know there are a lot of people that like only would date vegans. I was actually, when I was kind of doing some research for this, I found a post on Reddit that was a vegan that says like, hey, vegans out there, like, will you only date vegans or will you date non-vegans? And for most people, and this is kind of funny because I think that this is what a lot of vegans do. They say a lot of people were saying, oh, currently I'm in a relationship with a non-vegan, but my next relationship, if I have a next relationship, it'll definitely be with a vegan. And that's what like a lot of people said. But then I feel like when that time comes around, it's like, you know, you meet someone that you're really into and maybe they're vegan, maybe they aren't vegan. And so I don't know. I thought that was kind of funny, though.
Yeah. I mean, I ultimately, I do believe that you can't really help who you fall for.
Yeah.
Or who you're even just physically attracted to. And so, I mean, my personal mindset is like, I am open to the fact that I might meet someone and just go totally head over heels for somebody who is not vegan, and them not being vegan if in that situation would not stop me from, you know, engaging in that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, it's like, I'm not like going out of my way to try and like find people who, you know, aren't vegan. Like if I meet someone online or something, or, And I do a little creeping and see what they're all about, as everyone does on Facebook. I hope everyone does that.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, and I'll see like what they're eating. And then for a lot of people, if I see it's non-vegan food, it's kind of an instant turnoff. So,
yeah.
And it's not like I'm like, this person's great, but I must force myself to not be interested. It's just like my brain, like a switch, like flips. And I'm just like, not really interested in dealing with this situation.
Hey, Andy.
Uh-huh.
Unrelated, kind of related. Do you ever have the problem where you're on Instagram and like most of my friends are vegan on Instagram, but some aren't, like, you know, like high school friends or college friends or something like that. And I'll just be going through and liking pictures. And then do you ever accidentally like a picture of like a turkey sandwich and you're like, oh, darn it, I thought that was a tofurkey sandwich. And then you realize the person isn't vegan and it's actually turkey. And then you're like, oh, do I unlike this? Because they've already seen that. They may have already seen that I liked it. Has that ever happened to you?
I say unlike it.
I do usually unlike it, and I do it so fast that I'm like, oh, God, I hope that they didn't notice. I hope that they don't have, like, the notifications sent to them.
Maybe you want them to know that you not even that you didn't, like, never liked it, that you specifically liked so you could unlike.
Yeah.
You want them to know how much you dislike that turkey sandwich. Yeah.
But sorry about that. But, you know what's interesting, though? This is actually related to what you were saying, is that I feel like people, and it's going to be different for different people, there is some like cutoff in terms of how different, and I guess we'll just talk about like morals wise or ethics wise, there is some cutoff where people are like, okay, this person has such opposing views as me that I will not date them. And it's different for every person. Like I don't think I would ever date someone with the opposite like political views as me. So like I couldn't see myself dating someone like that, But with veganism, it's like, oh, veganism, like if they're not vegan, that's like, that's still okay. I'll still date that person. So it's, I don't know. And it's obviously different for every person. And whenever I hear about a relationship where someone is like a hardcore liberal and the other person is like a hardcore conservative and they have like, they're happily married, I'm always like, wow, that's like, I wouldn't know how they do that. So it's just kind of interesting. And I guess one thing that makes this, one of the things that makes this issue different is that like veganism, there are not that many vegans. It is not the norm to be vegan. It's not even, unfortunately, close to being the norm to be vegan. So I feel like you kind of have to make, as a vegan, one might argue that you have to, you should make more of an exception, because otherwise you are severely limiting your dating pool. But it's like, you're already kind of doing that with like, okay, I wouldn't date a conservative. I wouldn't date someone that doesn't like pizza. I wouldn't date like something like that.
So someone who likes pineapple on their pizza, perhaps.
Yeah. Don't even get me started. That is, I will say, Andy, that is my current girlfriend's favorite type of pizza is pineapple pizza.
Sounds like a keeper.
So yeah, I don't know. I just thought that was kind of interesting, that we kind of, different people are going to have different, I don't know what the right word is, but I've just been calling it like cutoffs. Like this is this, if this person has this view or has this, these ethics, they are like, I will not date that person. It's like so much of a turnoff that I am not going to date that person.
So you're drawing a line in the sand and saying across this line, you do not.
Yes. And that line is pineapple pizza.
Yes, you just said like a bunch of things that'd be interesting to talk about, but
you're going to talk about none of them.
Let's just do some more droopy dog impression. Yeah, I mean, people will have different cutoffs, and I think to the point of how we're kind of phrasing this topic as a question of should vegans date non-vegans, and actually the article that initially brought us into this, the question was, can vegans date non-vegans? And I think that there's like a couple different ways to interpret those things. Mm-hmm. And so I think that some people might say, if you're a vegan, then you should only date vegans. Like how could you possibly share your life with someone that doesn't share your same values? And that's kind of like maybe more of like, I've seen people saying that, and that's kind of more of like the vegan police kind of way of thought. And then there's the school of thought that's like, no, you should actually go out of your way to date non-vegans, because that's how you're going to help to spread veganism, because mm-hmm. you're probably more likely to have an effect on someone you're dating than just like a random, you know, friend in your social circle.
Yeah.
And then there's the can they date, which is more of a, how do we actually navigate this? Is it possible for a man and a woman to, you know, just like this really kind of, maybe archaic, like, is it even possible for them to get along? Yeah. But so I think we should dive into all of those. But okay. You had one other thing that I wanted to say.
Pineapple pizza?
No. Pineapple pizza. but oh yeah, so but before we do that, you mentioned dating pool. And I think, yeah, it's important for anyone that's like going to give someone a hard time if they're vegan and then they're dating a non-vegan, is to keep in mind that dating pool of kind of how, in terms of the general population, small we are. And especially if you are, say, a woman looking for a vegan man, you know, the statistics show that like the vegan movement is overwhelmingly filled with women. So it's like if you're trying to find a man that is vegan, then that super like narrows down your pool. And you know, and then if you have any other like subsect of like what you are that you're looking for, so like for instance for me, my mom's always worried that I am lowering I am narrowing my dating pool, because as we've talked about on previous shows, I have no desire to have children. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, well, I'm also straight edge and atheist and polyamorous. And I like am traveling, you know, every day of the year, pretty much. It's like, I have all these things that near my dating pool.
Must like mini golf.
I mean, it's not, you don't have to like it. You just have to have respect for the game, Paul. Like, if you're four strokes into a hole, you can't give up. You can't just start slapping around like it's like you're playing hockey. You got to play that hole through to your full six strokes and then move along.
You have to have respect for the game, communication with the game, and you have to share a space with the game.
Absolutely. So anyway, but all of that is to say that my mindset is, why should I be open, or like, why should I be like trying to date people that don't sort of, you know, think that everything that I'm doing is the coolest? Like, if I am involved with someone, I want to be like, this person is the coolest ever. I love everything that they're doing, or most of the things that they're doing. And I think it's awesome that they have these qualities, and not so much that they're like qualities or interest or lifestyle, you know, habits or however you want to define them, that I'm like willing to put up with, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I want to embrace it. And like, you know, I'm a little bit of a weirdo, but I'm like, I'm not on any dating apps. I'm not really like looking for people to bring into my life. Cause I'm sort of, my philosophy is, you know, whoever I'm with, I want them to enhance my life and I want to enhance their life. I don't want it to feel like we're like some whole of our piece of ourself that's missing because I don't have a partner in my life.
Yeah.
So maybe that allows me to be a little bit more like, this person's not vegan, no big deal, you know? And I know that other people have different needs. So, so it's like, it's hard for me to really translate my philosophies on these things over into advice for other people in terms of this show. But I do think that in defense of only dating non-vegans, or in defense of only dating vegans, I think it's totally reasonable for someone to sort of put their foot down there and be like, why would I want to share my life that had some polar opposite ethical view that I have? It makes total sense. Like, if, and not that they're the same thing, but if someone was like of a particular religion, I wouldn't give them any crap for not wanting to date someone that was a part of their religion. Like, you share certain things. If they're important to you, you want your partner to also share those values, and it can cause a lot of strife in the household, in situations. I'm sure we'll talk about individual situations coming up, but like, why would you want to deal with that if you didn't have to, you know?
And, I just want to say, though, like, I don't think that well, everything you said is definitely true, and you weren't saying this, but I will say, I don't think that you can tell other people, like, you can only, if you're vegan, you can only date vegans. I mean, it's just like unfair to some people that literally don't have any other vegans around them.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. And I think that there should be a mutual respect for those that choose to date only vegans. Or those that are like, you know what, I will date whoever I like, and this issue is not a make or break for me. I think both of those are totally valid, and there's benefits to both. And, you know, as I kind of mentioned, the should you date vegans in terms of should you be dating a vegan because it'll help make more vegans in the world. I think there will also be people that would say you should only date non-vegans for that aspect alone.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to venture and say that we both disagree with that.
What makes you think that, Paul?
I don't know. And I actually did, when I was looking for other articles, and I'll, like, most articles that I found are kind of saying the same thing that that this first article already said, but I'll post them anyways because they do offer some different perspectives, like the vegan talking to the non-vegan in the relationship and the vegan talking to the vegan in the relationship and that sort of thing. But pretty much all of the articles at the bottom would say, like, oh, hey, by the way, like, do not try and convert your partner to veganism. It's just like creepy and manipulative and just like kind of weird. And I've definitely said this, and we both definitely said this before on a previous episode, that it's just so weird to me if you're entering a relationship with this kind of like hidden agenda for the relationship, and your purpose for being in the relationship is not, you know, like getting to know the other person and like falling in love with the other person. It's just like, oh, and also getting this person to become vegan. Maybe if you were very upfront with that and you said, like, on your second date with the person, like, oh, hey, by the way, like, I know you're not vegan. Like, I really want you to be vegan if you were, and I'm going to try and get you to be vegan. And if for some reason the other person was like, oh, okay, I don't care. Sure. Like, you can try. Like, then I guess that's okay. But I feel like most people wouldn't do that. Most people would not be upfront with that because it is a little sketchy. So I would say that's a no-no burger.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel like something like that, if you were to get into a relationship with someone solely for the fact that you're like, I'm going to make a new vegan out of this, and not because you really like the person and you share interest or some kind of emotional bond, and it would be cool if they went vegan, so I will, you know, so I'm going to be an advocate for that. But like, as Paul was saying, like, you know, don't make that like the only thing you talk about. Like, only bring it up when they bring it up. But if you're like just in there because you're like, I can influence this person to go vegan, seems really dishonest. Mm-hmm. And I mean, honestly, I feel like that would even blur the lines of consent on some level. If you're like, if they don't realize that you're just there because you're trying to get them to go vegan,
yeah,
and they think you're sharing some other bond.
Yeah.
So that seems messed up. And then, as we've kind of touched on before as well, no one wants to be in a relationship with someone where they feel like they're not good enough for their partner, mm-hmm. or like their partner like would like them a lot more if only they did this thing. And it's, you know, it's hard to not feel that, even if it's never even been stated. You know, it's kind of like how people will often just sort of show themselves as feeling really like guilty, and like when they're around a vegan without a vegan even bringing it up, like, well, I don't eat that much meat, and I get mine from this place. And you're like, bro, I never asked you any of that stuff. So, you know, people just sort of are automatically on the defensive if you've made some kind of ethical or moral stance a part of your everyday life.
Yeah.
So like, it just seems like it's a recipe for a disaster if you're entering into a relationship expecting someone to change. Like, it's not like there's no room for improvement. Everyone should be working to continuously improve themselves. Hey. Wink, wink. But if your agenda is just to change someone, that just seems like it's a recipe for a disaster.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And that goes for, like, you know, we've talked about this as well, friends and family. Like, of course everyone should be sort of working to make the world we want around us. And that means influencing those in our social circle to consider, you know, veganism. But if you get hung up on that, if it's like a goal that you must reach or else you're not going to be happy with your life, you're just setting yourself up for a lifetime of sadness and misery.
Yeah. And I mean, at the very least, with both the person that you're dating and friends and family, it's like they are just merely by them being in such close proximity to you, they are being exposed to veganism like in a greater way than the majority of people would be. Did that sentence make sense?
It did.
Okay, good. You paused and I was worried that I just like put words where they shouldn't be and just mixed everything up. But
I was just listening to your beautiful boy voice.
Thank you. Beautiful boy voice.
your nice young boy voice.
So yeah. There was an interesting article. It wasn't an article, and we'll include this too. It was one of those, like, it was just from some newspaper. It was like a letter to the editor, and it was basically this guy saying, like, oh, I eat meat, and I have a vegan girlfriend, and I think she might be the one, and she's always assured me that eating, it doesn't bother her that I eat meat. But I still feel guilty about it sometimes. Like, what should I do? And I loved, and we'll include this in the show notes, but I loved the response. It was basically just like, well, you should listen to her, because if she said she doesn't care, then she doesn't care. But maybe it's like you're conscious that feels guilty about it. And that's why this is coming up. And like, maybe it's you and not her. And I was like, oh, snap. And it was nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is sort of a key piece of advice to the can vegans date non-vegans, is that you need to have trust and mutual respect. And of course this goes for like every aspect of any relationship, even friendships or business relationships. But if you can't sort of exhibit that trust and just like to believe that your partner is saying, hey, it's not a big deal that you're not vegan. You just have to sort of trust that and go with that. You know, so I think that's definitely a key survival tip.
Yeah. Survival.
Colin Bear Grylls.
Yeah. Do you any other interesting discussion topics or points you wanted to make, Andy?
I think that's it.
Yeah. I think we ran this well dry. Like I said, I'll include a couple cool, I mean, they're not like I said, they say a lot of the same things, but it's kind of like in a vegan, non-vegan relationship, there's an article where the vegan's talking to the vegan, where the vegan is talking to the non-vegan. And there's that one that I just talked about where it's like the non-vegan perspective. So just trying to get in all of the perspectives in here.
And speaking of perspectives, we want to know what y'all think about this. And I think everyone will have a diversity of opinions, but feel free to let us know what you think. If you're dating a non-vegan and if it's just a joyride or if you have big problems with that, do you think someone is a bad vegan if they date a non-vegan? Do you think someone's a bad vegan if they only date vegans, that they're cutting themselves off? Let us know what you think about all of that stuff. Best way to do that is through our email, and that's thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. And you can also check out thecommentist.com. That's thecommentist.com. And you can find all the archives of our back episodes. You can comment on individual episodes there as well.
And Andy brings up a point. I do feel like a bad vegan sometimes because of this. But
oh, Paul.
But Andy has assured me that I am, in fact, a terrible vegan, so I guess that's love.
We like to play a game called Good Vegan, Bad Vegan.
whenever we're trying to interrogate a meat eater, we play Good Vegan, Non-Vegan. Good Vegan, Bad Vegan. I'll be bad vegan. Andy will be good vegan.
Yeah. Paul walks in. He's like, kind of hot under these lights, huh? And then I come in with some kombucha.
Oh, jeez. All right. Yeah, I think that's all we got for today. Andy, where are you going to be coming up?
July 30th, I will be at the Pittsburgh Veg Fest. That's, of course, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. August 7th, I'll be at the Western New York Veg Fest in Buffalo, New York. And August 20th, I will be at Vegan Soul Fest in Baltimore, Maryland. So come out and say hi. I'll be behind the Compassion Company table, and you can find all the links to the events and more info at CompassionCo.com. That's just CompassionCo.com.
Very nice. And I will be in Connecticut.
Paul, you're full of surprises.
All right. So I think that's all we got for today. I have one thing left to say, and that is we are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
I can show you the world, shining, shimmering, splendid.